Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Brought to you by Baptist Health and by Everbank. Jaguars Thursday begins right now. Right now.
This is Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli, following the Gus Bradley radio show. The coach on his way out of here. Getting ready for the San Diego Chargers this week at Qualcomm Stadium, week four of the National Football League. Begins tonight with Thursday Night Football. What's going on there, Jeffrey?
What do you say, JP?
How was your visit with the coach?
It's always good. Yes. It's always good. You know, one thing I really appreciate about him, and I think a lot of listeners out there and fans of the Jaguars can appreciate, is really how transparent he is, how open he is about answering questions, and I think that's kind of unique. And because in the National Football League, a lot of coaches kind of take the approach that, they have to protect everything.
Right. Yeah.
And you have the extreme, like a Bill Belichick, and then you have a guy that probably is not quite to where Gus is at, but a Jeff Fisher, who is actually very open and honest, but also very protective at the same time. So I appreciate how Gus operates, and not only in the studio, but also with the media.
There's a happy medium there, and he certainly meets that. Bo, what's up with you, man? How are you?
Another day.
Yeah.
Doing good.
I don't know if you heard. By the way, you'll like this a lot.
Okay.
I get a notification on my phone earlier today, Bo, that Jeff Loggeman has joined Twitter.
Oh,
is
really?
Is this a true story?
Whoa! I got to make sure I follow. What happened?
I actually had some folks come to me in the sponsorship department and said, here's what we need.
So you were basically asked nicely to join Twitter.
Yeah. It's part of the job requirement. So I said, not a problem. I can handle that.
Part of the job requirement.
And you know what? I've been fighting it for so long.
Oh,
and am I going to be on Twitter like you, Tony, that lives and dies? I mean, I don't live and die.
People hate Tony on Twitter.
But you're on it. I mean, you're on it and you're into it. I'm not going to be like that.
Well, I'm a binge Twitter, so I'll go weeks without like.
Well, you have to get off of it because you've stirred something up and made people angry for some reason.
Well, some people get really excited and are happy, and some are angry.
But Tony's the one that'll chirp back at people. That's the problem.
Yeah, and see, I'm not into chirping.
You're like water off a duck's back. Just let it roll right off, right? Jeff?
Well, at some
Tony, point, not so much.
Well, listen, I don't respond to everything, trust me, but some comments are so ridiculous and at times ignorant that they deserve a response.
At Logs56, Logs56.
Right. That was my nickname when I was growing up. Well, it was actually my brother's nickname.
What, Logs?
Yeah.
We call you that.
Well, because, for so
we
long.
We know that.
Yeah, I know you know that, but I mean, a lot of people out there don't know that because, when I grew up as a kid, I had an older brother. And my older brother was one of those feared and respected older brothers. Well, he was Logs because everybody would mispronounce our name, and so they just said Logs. So that was my brother. I was Little Logs. Well, then eventually I got to be bigger than him, right. So then I assumed the nickname.
So you just took it over.
Yeah, I just took it over.
L-O-G-S 56.
Yeah, and 56, I don't know where that comes from.
Pulled
it out of thin air.
Just a random number.
Yeah.
Look at this smiling guy right here. That's his.
That's good.
That's my picture for
it's
the.
It's like a mugshot.
Well, it's kind of like that. It's the staff staff
headshot.
Headshot yeah. for here for the yeah. Jaguars. You
yeah.
know?
He's got a nice photo of the bridge in the background.
I'll have to make sure I get a follow.
That was my choice. I chose that particular picture. Okay, along with some help because. Brandon knows that I'm not exactly Twitter savvy. I had to have somebody.
No,
I had to have somebody help me set this up.
I'm shocked.
Okay, from A to Z.
I'm shocked.
And he said, "What do you want as your what is that picture called in your Twitter account?
Avatar?
I don't know what whatever it's called.
I have no idea.
It's not the picture of you.
Oh,
it's the
cover photo. Or
the cover photo.
Whatever.
Okay,
it is,
so you want a cover photo? And I started thinking, okay. Deer, turkeys, fish. And then I said, let's go ahead and represent. Let's put a picture of what is the greatest treasures that we have in this city. And that's the St. John's River. Yeah. And I said, put that up in there. And it happens to be one of my favorite. And actually, you can see one of my favorite fishing spots in that picture.
Already?
And that's all I'm going to tell anybody about that pick. I'm not going to give the spot away or what kind of fish. That's all I'm going to say.
Wow. Well, you're on Twitter for like 2 hours. You already have 690 followers. Congratulations.
Oh, that's cool. Great.
That's well done. So follow Jeff Lagerman.
So I can feel good about that? Is that
that's
a good number?
Good. That's good. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good start. Yeah, good
really
start.
Good start. So I'm looking forward to see what you're going to tweet on a weekly basis.
Not much. No, I'll tweet. Yeah. I'll tweet.
Well, let's get to this this Jaguars team. You know, Bortles is quarterback. That's obviously the big story this week. His first NFL start coming up in San Diego. But is the defensive effort this week a bigger story than that?
Well, I mean, no, because it's not the quarterback position. It's not on that side of the ball. You know, it's always the quarterback, and right. It always will be the quarterback until you have an established player at that position. But
okay.
if you wanted to say what is bigger for the success of this football team.
For winning.
It's the defense.
Yeah.
But the biggest story is the quarterback, and I get that. And I remember, you know, if I'm the San Diego Chargers, I'm excited. I mean, I am excited. And I remember when Hall of Famer Troy Aikman was a young player with the Dallas Cowboys, a very young player, and I, if I remember correctly, it was in his second year. Because the first year when he was the starter, they didn't win a game.
They won 1-15.
Yeah, 1-15. And so the second year, we were getting ready to play the Dallas Cowboys in New York, and Pete Carroll, you know, Greg Robinson, you know, they were our defensive coaches at the time, Pete being the defensive coordinator. We decided that on the very first snap, the first offensive play for Troy Aikman, because he was still acting very young as a player, as the first sound that came out of his mouth, we were going to jump off sides. And I'm talking not one, not two, all four of us with the hands down on the ground, we were coming off the ball like it was 3rd and 20 with the game on the line, and the first thing that came out of his mouth, boom, we were gone. Well, he gets under center and says, down, boom, and here come four guys off the ball. You know, the center gets knocked back into his lap. He falls back, and Troy's got this look on his face like, oh, my God. What happens on the second, the first snap, which was the second actual snap on the field, he fumbled the exchange with the center, and we recovered the ball, and we took it in and scored. You know, so, I mean, that was the approach that you take with a young quarterback. You try to rattle him as much as possible. And the Chargers are going to take that same approach. Now, will it happen? I don't think it's likely, because if I'm a Charger defender and I'm watching the film – of Blake Bortles against the Indianapolis Colts here, especially on that bootleg, to where he didn't freak out when he had two defenders in his face on the bootleg immediately. I'm going, hey, this kid's pretty tough.
Yeah. What do you make of that, Tony, going across the country, first NFL start for a guy?
I mean, listen, it's forget the across the country. You're going against one of the better teams in the AFC. A very aggressive, sound, and physical defense. And a team that's got it going offensively. And so there's a chance you can find yourself down and in a tough situation, and it's going to be loud, and they're going to be going. And so I think that's the bigger issue. Listen, I don't think – I've never thought since we saw him in the preseason that Blake Bortles is going to be a guy who's going to wilt under pressure. And I don't think you're going to rattle him. My guess is he's going to make some mistakes and see some things out there that he hasn't seen before. And I know John Pagano well, their defensive coordinator, and he's in a blitz to getting off the bus. They blitz all the time anyways, and they're going to come. They're going to play man, like Jeff talked about with the head coach, and they're going to test him. But, I mean, what I expect is he's going to make some great plays. He's going to make some bonehead plays, and you just hope the bonehead plays don't turn into interceptions or turnovers or fumbles and give short fields to a very dangerous – offense with Philip Rivers.
Here's the difference, I think, between a guy like Blake Bortles and maybe a conventional, you know, in the pocket young quarterback. When you watch the game, and if Blake Bortles screws something up, you may not know it. And the reason I say that is that he may turn some type of screw up that he has into something exciting and positive. He has that ability. I said this I don't want to say all the back to OTAs and minicamp, because I wouldn't have said that back then. But when you watched him in the preseason games, that I said this about Blake, that he has the ability to make those around him better because of his ability to elude pressure, his ability to make something happen, and his willingness to push the ball down the field. And that's exciting. I can't remember the last time that I've been more excited to watch a young quarterback play. Now, I was anxious to watch Blaine Gabbert, but this is different. And it's different just because of his ability to make the plays that aren't on the script. And I think that that makes him unique.
It helps an offense, Tony, when you can prolong a play.
There's a lot of things that help an offensive line is how you move in the pocket, avoid pressure, and you can hang in there. It makes everything look better. All you have to do is go turn on the tape of the San Diego Chargers. And while Phillip Rivers isn't going to have the athletic ability and scramble ability of Blake Bortles, what he does have is he's very effective in the pocket of moving around. And when it looks like it's collapsing, he shuffles here a little bit there, holds on to the last minute, and then makes a big throw. That makes everyone look better. And what it does, it gives energy to everyone on both sides of the ball. And you sense the energy when he went in the game last week. Mm-hmm. And certain guys have that ability, and guys, whether you say they play harder or longer or finish better, I mean, I don't know what it is, but there are guys who have that ability. And so far, listen, it's such a small sample size we have with what Blake has done, and we're all hopeful. And I believe that's the case because I think that's in his makeup. I think he's going to be a good player. But we'll find out. I mean, Sunday's coming, whether he's ready or not. And they're going to play the game, and they're going to kick it off, 4 p.m. Eastern time, and we're going to find out about 3 hours and 10 minutes later exactly how it went.
Jaguars Thursday, J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Buscelli. Another interesting point this week during Jed Fish's press conference.
Which was great, by the way. I mean, I was talking about how transparent, that Gus is and how open he is. That press conference with Jed Fish I thought was fantastic. And I wasn't there to watch it live, but I watched it yesterday at Jaguars.com.
Hey, thanks for the plug.
I did, and it was. Did you watch it, Tony?
No, I have not seen it yet.
And it's titled, and I mentioned this in Gus's show, it's called Blake Has the Last Pen.
Yep.
I read it, the transcripts, but I didn't.
Fantastic interview and a fantastic open description by Jed Fish about that process. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how he talked about, and I read the press conference, how he talked about that, he sends the game plan Tuesday night, told them basically, tell me what you like, tell me what you don't like, and it's an ongoing conversation. And at the end of the day, they're going to run and put Blake in the most comfortable position he can because he's going to be comfortable with what is in the game plan. I thought that is very smart. Now, listen, a lot of teams do that with the coach, with their quarterback.
But not all teams.
Not all teams, but I think it shows a lot of wisdom on Jed and the rest of the offensive staff saying, listen, we got a young player. Let's not try to – because what coaches will do, they all do it. And everything looks good on the board.
They want to outsmart them.
And everything looks good. And you can draw it up and get in this formation. They're going to give us this. And we have this angle and this route's there. And we can, pick it up here and we can do this.
Right.
And it all looks so pretty. It's like a Picasso on the board. I mean, it's just like, boy, that looks good. And then reality sets in is you have to get an individual ready to absorb that. And the volume a guy can handle is different. It changes with age. It changes with experience. It changes with intelligence. I mean, every guy's a little bit different. The smart move by the staff is saying, okay, let's put everything in we think is going to be good. Let's give it to Blake. Let him get comfortable. Let's work through the week, find out. And they'll sit down Saturday night and have a conversation. And Blake will say, I like this. And I feel comfortable with this play. I see this. I understand this. I know where these guys are going. And that's what we'll see on Sunday.
And throughout the week in the team meetings, too. I mean, it's really one of the first times he's going to have to hold the clicker and lead the meeting as the quarterback
of
the offense.
Yeah, but you know what?
He's done that before.
Yeah,
right?
But I mean,
is that a big difference?
Look, I heard that from Jed Fish. And even though that he is the starter, I mean, Chad, they're going to have to lean on Chad Henne a bunch.
Okay.
Chad's going to have to be able to point a lot of things out to him and the wide receivers or the offensive line, whichever that meeting, that they're in. You can't expect a young player like Blake to be able to step into that role immediately. It's a transition. And it's good that he has a very supportive veteran guy like Chad Henne in that role. And because if you don't have that, how do you ever get to the point of really, really knowing exactly what you're supposed to be doing? And I think that that Blake understands that he's got to have some help along the way. And most importantly, I think he has a lot of respect for Chad. And I think Chad has a lot of respect for Blake. And as long as that continues to stay that way, and I expect it to, then that's positive for this football team going forward.
We've heard that a lot before.
Because, Tony, when you were a rookie and you watched film, and it took me a while to learn this, and I talked with Alan Hearns about this about 2 weeks ago. You know, when he's watching film more for what I have to do. Okay, what do I have to do on this play based on what that looks like? And at some point when you're a veteran, you start to watch film and it becomes beyond that because you already know what you're supposed to do. You know what you're supposed to do based on his alignment or what type of formation or coverage that they have or whatever. Then you start watching the smaller details. For example, defensive line. When I would watch when I was a young player, you'd watch offensive linemen and you'd look at stances and plays and the design of the plays. Well, after a while, instead of the design of the plays and the stances, you would start picking out individual stances to pick up tips on what that guy was going to do. And then you look at the guy next to him, what's he going to do based on his stance to basically decipher what the play was going to be. And that's the evolution that you take when you watch film from a young player to a veteran player. And that's why he's got to have Chad kind of alongside during that kind of that journey.
Very interesting.
No, I mean, it's one of the things that you look at some of the position groups that you worry about because they're so young. Who is teaching the young players how to do that?
And that's where the coaches, I mean, the coaches really have to work hard in that instance.
This portion of Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Fanatics.com. When we return, we'll look at the Jaguars defense, some changes in the starting lineup this week, what to expect against Philip Rivers, Antonio Gates, and the San Diego Chargers. Jaguars Thursday continues after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Hey, Jags fans, you want your photo or tweet on the massive new Jags video boards? Hashtag JagsGameDayLive and be a part of the game experience at Everbank Field. The social drive brought to you by the Nimnick family of dealerships. Jaguars Thursday continues. JP Shadrick with Jeff Lagerman, Tony Baselli. Got to mention, too, guys, Football 101 for Women is coming up October 16th. The Jaguars Women's Association puts this on every year. 6:30 to 9 o'clock in the West Touchdown Club. Tickets for sale, jaguars.com/2014NFL101.
That's a Thursday night, by the way,
October 16th. The proceeds will benefit Baptist Health's Hill Breast Center. Tickets are $100. There's the technical side of football, interactive workshop, and cocktails and appetizers and all that, too.
So all right.
That'll be a good one coming up on October
16th. I had this
16th.
Feeling that JP will somehow or another find his way to this women's event after the radio show on October 16th.
Well, he is the ladies' man.
I'd like to learn about some football. Yeah, why not? You know, hey. For you two guys. Jaguars defense. You know, it's a couple of new starters this week. Josh Evans will start at free safety in place of Winston Guy. And JT Thomas at auto linebacker. It's not going to cure everything, obviously. If they were going to cure something, they would have been starting already, right?
No, I mean, but you got it.
You
got to
have something.
You got to make a change.
You have to stop with the mental breakdowns. I mean, that you can't have that happen. The game is hard enough to play when you're lined up correctly and you're competing with a guy purely based on athletic ability. But it's impossible to compete when you're not aligned properly and aware of the exact assignment and kind of being aware of routes within that assignment.
Yeah.
And right. That's why the changes were made.
And it's been so obvious. I mean, if you watch the game, and both Jeff and I, obviously, as we call the game, we see things. And then as we watch the tape afterwards, I mean, the breakdowns. It's supposed to be hard to get open when guys are running wide open on a consistent basis because of eye violations or not understanding the concept or the right route combinations and what you're supposed to do and the coverages. You got to make a change. And, you know, 3 weeks, and you saw a lot of the same mistakes over and over
we
again.
We saw it in the first half at Philadelphia.
And Jeff and I, I remember sitting in the booth up with Jeff, and we're like –
And Foles didn't make the throws. That's right.
I was like, my goodness, did you see how wide open that guy was? And thankfully Nick Foles missed it. But guys stopped missing it, and you get it on tape. And, you know, one thing that you learn as a player is if you put a flaw on tape, every team's going to keep on attacking it until you figure out to fix that flaw. And I remember as an offensive lineman, one thing I never wanted to do is you did not want to give up a lot of power, because if they see you giving up power, guess what you're going to get? You're going to get powered. And so I was I was always – early in that game, I knew power was coming, and I was going to shut it down because then they – and you can ask Jeff. I knew as an offensive lineman, if I shut down that defense end's power move early, he was never going to come back to it because they lose the confidence that they can't do it. So they try to do other stuff. And it's the same with any position, any scheme. We used to say all the time that teams were going to test you as an offense with the blitz. If you pick up the blitz, you're not going to see it again. They're going to have a scheme where they're going to go to five down, which was a bare front, cover the nose and the two tackles, and really crowd the line of scrimmage. If you had an answer for it, then you were going to get them out and go back to their base stuff. It's having answers to the test. And if you have no answers to the test or you keep on failing the test, which there have been major coverage breakdowns, there's no secret that tight ends keep on getting the ball because they saw it on film and they're like, hey, we're going to keep on going to that until they show they can stop it.
We had, numerous times in my 10-year career to where we're getting ready to play an opponent and they were struggling with one particular, whether it be a zone dog or a man coverage blitz or whatever. And we didn't have it designed. You know, we didn't have it in the playbook. We would insert it into the playbook.
You're running it.
In some fashion, using our terminology, and we were running it. Mm-hmm. And we were running it in the exact same situation that the team was having, you know, hard time with in the previous weeks to see if they had gotten it corrected. And if they didn't correct it, we keep on going back to the well every time that the opportunity presented itself.
It's very easy.
We would actually even have names for it. For example, you know, like under Pete Carroll used to have terminology for his blitzes, and it wasn't based on the scheme so much as it had names. For example, we had one in New York. It was called Hess Dog, and Leon Hess was the owner of the New York Jets at the time, and it was two guys kind of coming up the middle, and the ends dropping off in a zone dog, and it kind of looked like somebody pumping oil. And so he said, okay, Hess Dog, that was the name of it. And if we had a blitz coming up for a punt, let's say we were playing the San Diego Chargers and they were having a problem with a blitz, we would have a new defensive call in the playbook that week against the San Diego Chargers. We'd say Bolt Dog, and that would be the name of it, Bolt Dog. Right. And it was designed specifically for that issue that they were having. And you knew it. You know, and it's, that's the beautiful thing about defense and film. If you have a problem, they're going to see it. And they're going to identify it and keep trying to throw it at you.
You guys, you brought it up, Tony. Tight ends, covering tight ends. Antonio Gates this week.
He's not what he was, but he's still pretty dang good. And they got a young guy who can run and is very athletic.
Ladarius Green.
Ladarius Green, yep. Who is like another receiver out there. He's 6'6", you know, 240, but he blocks better than I thought he would have. He's a weapon. And they got – and Phillip Rivers likes the tight ends. They do a lot of crossing stuff with Antonio Gates. It doesn't look like he can run any faster than Jeff or I, but somehow he gets open and he uses his body.
Gates is really slow.
Yeah, really slow. But somehow he gets open and uses great hands, and he just maneuvers. And
he's best when he's playing against a zone defense.
That's right.
Okay.
You know, which is what he's going to see this week against the Jaguars. Yep. You know, but –
He finds the soft spot of the zone as well as anybody in the league.
Yeah, he's a heck of a player, you know, and quarterbacks trust a guy like that, you know. But, you know, when you bring up tight ends, a lot of people say, well, the tight ends, is it the safety or is it the linebacker? Because that's the first thought that they come up with. Okay, it's a matchup game, right?
Right.
That's not always the case. In fact, Film Room Friday tomorrow, going to show a play. You remember when Kobe Fleener was wide open, he dropped the touchdown pass?
Yep.
The first reaction of most people is that, holy cow, what happened to the linebacker? Well, yeah, it was partly the linebacker. Leroy Reynolds had really needed to expand his zone underneath of him. But also Dwayne Grotz was supposed to come off of the post route,
he got stuck,
pass it on to the safety, and then be over the top of the tight end, Kobe Fleener.
Yeah, they were in cover three, and Grotz ran with the number one.
There's two guys that should have been in better position.
He ran in with the number one receiver on the post. Fleener's the number two receiver going on a wheel route. Or a corner route, excuse me, and there was no one there. And it's because he's, you know, if you don't – listen, all of football, offense or defense, a lot of times it's about fall. Just, you know, it's a famous line that everyone has the sound on is Gus yelling, do your job. But it's – even beyond that, just follow your rules. Follow your rules. In the zone – in offense, zone game, get on your track, stay on your track, and it'll take you where you need to go. In coverage, listen, depending on the zone, I mean, man's easier. You just man up and go run around with them. But depending on the coverage, you know, there's number one receiver, number two receiver, number three. Where they go and how they release is going to dictate what you do. And trust your rules. And if you trust what you're supposed to do and you know what you're supposed to do, it's amazing how things work much better. But when you don't trust it, you cheat. You know, Jeff talks about eye violations all the time by linebackers on play-action pass. Safeties can do the same thing. Heck, corners can do. If you start chasing a guy inside on a post, they're going to, you know, work outside. And so, listen, I don't think there's anybody on this defense, and let's talk about the secondary, the back seven, that are without sin. And so there's two position changes, you know, Winston guy. Josh Evans going in for him, and JT Thomas taking over for Leroy Reynolds. And so those are everyone. So everyone's first reaction is like, "Oh,
just those two.
You know, those guys are the issue, man. Get those.
It's gonna
get those bums out of here, and we'll be just fine."
Chargers don't know what's coming.
Yeah, I mean, listen. I mean, we could go through and watch film, and like I said, there is none without sin. I mean, there's plenty of blame to be passed around.
While we're on defense, we've, you know, picked on the back seven this whole segment, but up front, how's the line playing for you guys?
I think a couple guys are playing pretty well and are doing a good job, especially flashing. I think Derek Marks is really flashing and has done some nice things. I think Chris Clemons needs to play better. I don't see him winning. I thought play better
against the run.
I think that's the biggest thing. I think the edge was very soft. Mm-hmm. If you watch the Colts, a lot of those runs, the one in the first half near the middle, the end of the second quarter, it's a simple little stretch play or sweep play with Bradshaw. The first Jaguar doesn't make contact about 6 yards down the field. The whole side just getting collapsed and getting pushed down the field, and so he needs to hold the edge better. You know, in that case, I think Andre Branch is doing a much better job against the run. I wouldn't be surprised to see him. I think he's holding the point better right now. I don't know what Jeff's thoughts are on that, but he's holding the point much better in the run than Chris is. And so there's guys that need to play better. And I'll say this. I would like us to see get off blocks better. And I'll tell you the one thing about the San Diego Charger offensive line. They're not very athletic. I think their right tackle is a very good young player.
He's really good.
I really like him. Troutman, the second-year player, is a big physical guy. Mm-hmm. The rest of them are brawlers. I mean, King Dunlop can't move to save his life, but he's so long and so big, he just mauls people. How he doesn't get called for holding more, I have no idea. But, you know, what they do, the one thing I'll give them all credit for, they're maulers, big people.
Yeah, but they're not that good in the running game.
But the only reason they're even halfway decent in the running game, because it's not like a good defensive front in the Buffalo Bills. I mean, they got some studs. The Bills do. Those two defensive tackles are
Kyle Williams and Marcel Darius
are studs.
Roll Tide.
Yeah, he can play.
I mean, those two are studs.
Mario Williams.
Mario Williams is a good player. Mm-hmm. I mean, and they did a good job hemming up the run. Now the Chargers are down to the third running back. But Steve, with that, the one thing that I was watching the film, I say the Chargers do a good job of staying on blocks. Now they're not going to get a lot of movement because they're so dang high. And they play out of a two-point stance more times than not. But it was, I mean, two good players inside. They had nice games, but it wasn't like they were.
It ain't about the running game, though.
Yeah, but
against the Chargers. It's about Philip Rivers.
But even the pass, Jeff, they don't. I mean, they did a good job of not letting guys get off blocks. And that's one thing that I think this front seven needs to do. We need to get off blocks and do a better job of getting to the ball.
Time for a break on Jaguars Thursday.
Not only is he on Twitter, he's producing.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
I'm just trying to help you out here,
good.
JP.
It was good.
Joe fell asleep.
New
Joe's been waiting for the break for like 6 minutes, Joe? 5 minutes? Something like that. Trying to help you out.
I'll read the card when we get back. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
New system, new routes, new way. The JTA is transforming to be the kind of bus system customers enjoy riding. The Route Optimization Initiative marks the beginning of a new way of doing business at the JTA. For more information on the initiative, visit JTAFLA.com or call 904-630-3100. Jaguars Thursday continues. JP Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Baselli. Phone lines open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. We'll get to some calls coming up. Injury report today, 5 players did not practice. Marquise Lee with a hamstring, I'm not expected to go this week. Geno Hayes, not injury-related, did not practice today. Roy Miller did not practice on Veterans Day. Mickey Schuler, sick, did not practice. And Will Tofoa, the ankle, did not practice today. You always say that Foe is a really, really strong fullback, and that's something to watch this week.
Well, it's extremely important because you already have issues at tight end.
That's right.
And that's the number one reason why. I mean, you look at the Jaguars' tight end spot, it looks like you have a chance of getting Clay Harbor back in the mix. Mickey Schuler, illness, right?
Yes.
You know, how's he going to be on Sunday, getting on a plane, you know, traveling to the West Coast? And then your next tight end is Nick Jacobs, who was just signed off the New Orleans Saints practice squad. If all of a sudden you don't have a fullback, where's your personnel groupings go to? You know, are you going to expect to go out there and maybe play 3 wide receivers and a tight end with a young quarterback the entire game? You know, you'd like to be able to have a little bit of balance and take the pressure off of the passing game by having a fullback and having all of your tight ends available. That's not a good thing to have. Hopefully he will be fine.
Well, and the reality is, it's not like you're deep at receiver as well.
That's true.
I mean, yeah.
Or experienced at receiver.
Well, I mean, both. And so, listen, I think with Mercedes Lewis out, Will Tofoa is critical to be healthy. And so my guess is, and we don't know anything different than anyone listening, is my guess is they're being extra precautious with him to make sure he is ready for game day.
Let me give you a couple numbers here.
Okay. And, all right. And I need to write these down.
You can if you want to.
I'm going to write them down.
Well, he may just tweet them later.
If you look at the quarterback position, the tight end position, and the starting 2 wide receivers, okay, San Diego, okay, and then you compare that quarterback, tight end, 2 wide receivers to the Jaguars, okay, the Chargers obviously have Phillip Rivers, Antonio Gates, Keenan Allen, and Malcolm Floyd. Combined, that group has 357 games started.
357.
357.
Okay. Started, yep.
If you take Blake Bortles, okay, Mickey Schuler Jr., if Clay Harbor cannot go, Cecil Shorts, and Allen Robinson, okay, combined, those 4 guys have 27 games started. Okay?
So you're saying it's not really close.
357 games started to 27. Now, if Clay Harbor is in the lineup,
you know, it's much better.
That number jumps up to 49. So then it's 357 games started to 49. That's an eye-opener.
Yes, sir.
That's a big-time eye-opener. Now, and if you expanded that.
Well, just go to the offensive line. It doesn't get much better.
No, that's the thing. You expand it to the offensive line, or if you expanded it to having 3 wides on the field, change personnel groupings, and the 3rd wide receiver is Allen Hurns, the disparity gets even greater because the San Diego Chargers have, I'm looking at the list here, Eddie Royal in his 7th year. I mean, so the disparity would even grow greater.
Well, let me just say it this way, and Jeff does a great job every week. He builds a board for the game, and it's a color-coded board, and the rookies are in green, and starters for us are in like a bluish gray, and the Chargers are in whatever the team color is, yellow this week. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking at it just now as Jeff was talking, and I look at the offensive depth chart for the Jaguars, and there is a lot of green. I mean, a lot of green. In fact, there's 5 greens that start, 6 that play significant roles.
That's right.
So then I go look over at the Chargers depth chart for the offense, and there is 0 green that has any significant impact on the game. The only one that you might see, and you'll probably see as a backup because they have 2 injuries at running back, is a third – he was 4th team before this week, Brandon Oliver, a running back. And then they do have a backup guard as a rookie. Other than that, it is a completely veteran group.
So they have 2 greens total, 2 rookies on their offense as a whole.
And there is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 on the Jaguars.
10 on the Jaguars' offensive side of the ball.
So we got that going for us.
So, yeah, it's good.
But, I mean,
it's the way it is.
It goes to show you that, you know, that side of the ball is going to require patience. But, you know, at the same time, even though it's going to require patience, you're also excited about some of the glimpses that you see out of some of these guys. You're excited about what you saw out of Allen Hurns over the first three games of the season. You're excited about Allen Robinson, particularly a guy who didn't have any training camp or OTAs from any camps for the most part. What Luke Boanko did in his first start. What Brandon Linder has been able to do in three starts so far. I mean, you see things that you say, okay, that's what you can grasp a hold of and feel good about for the future.
And here's a caveat, and I agree with the future. But if you look at where this team is extremely young on offense – take Blake out of it. Obviously, we know how young he is. Starting center, right guard, both rookies. Their best – I think he's their best defensive player is Corey Legit, who's going to line up on the three technique a lot.
And it could be on either side.
On either side, but he likes – in third down, he likes that rushing against our right side. So he's going to be over Linder.
Which I think Brandon will do fine.
But he's a heck of a player. Then you look at the secondary for the Chargers. Brandon Flowers, veteran, very good player. Sharice Wright, veteran, good player. I'm not going to say very good, but solid. Jason Verrett, rookie, but a very good player.
I think
player.
It's pronounced Verrett.
Is it Verrett?
I think it's Verrett.
Okay, Verrett. I usually don't get those right until game day, and we wait till then. As we sit in the booth,
depth of research here, Tony.
Actually sit in the booth. Jeff, Frank, and I, and say, okay, how are we pronouncing this guy's name? Because you get the pronunciation.
Just get it all right. Yeah, nobody knows the difference. Yeah, we know all the same.
That's my theory. So if we all say the same thing, no one's going to know any different. No, we try to get him right. We're either the pronunciation guide and we get it right. But my point in saying that is, and so you're going to have young receivers against, I think, watching them on tape, and Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, but a pretty dang good in the secondary.
Yeah, real good.
I mean, and so, and you got their best defensive lineman who's going to be working against a rookie. And so, listen, I mean, it's a great test. And
I was right, by the way. It's Verrett.
Verrett. And as a competitor, you got to love it because it's a great test against a – listen, well, I think San Diego is going to give Denver a run for the money in the AFC West and is one of the better teams in the AFC. They are a good football team.
Unless something happens to Phillip Rivers.
Oh, well, then obviously. But that's
the same thing with the Broncos.
Or the Patriots. I mean, you can go down the list of any of the great teams that are going to have a chance to be great this year. It's all about the quarterback.
But, you know, one thing that Phillip Rivers does not have, Peyton Manning doesn't have it either, but Phillip Rivers is more apparent. He does not have much arm strength. I mean, he reminds me a lot of Chad Pennington. First of all, he's got that funky thrown motion where it's almost like the elbow
is tied to his body.
It's tied to his ribs on his right side, and it's kind of a seal look. You know, it's like a seal trying to pass a football. It's kind of funny looking.
Okay.
But when you watch the result, it's really good.
Here's the difference between him and Chad Pennington. The ball always gets to where Phillip wants it to go.
Yes.
And somehow, and it doesn't look like it's going very fast, but somehow no one else can get to it except for his guy. It's one of the mysteries of the universe as I watch tape going, how is that ball? Why, look at how long it's there. Someone go get it. And the only guy who gets there.
It's in the air. And you're like, okay, somebody make a play. Up, it's completed.
It is shocking to me. But I think.
But you know, you sit there and you say that, and then you look at what he was able to do against Seattle. I mean, what was he, like 70, almost 75% completion percentage against the Seattle Seahawks? Yeah. You know,
and then the old man of the group somehow had two touchdowns.
Three.
Or was it three?
Antonio Gates had three.
Oh, you're right. It was three.
And Phillip Rivers was the NFL FedEx player, air player of the week or something.
But that's three touchdowns against a secondary that is touted as being outstanding, great safeties and everything else. Now, they took advantage of Cam Chancellor, who I'm not sure is the greatest in coverage. But, listen, it's a good team. I look forward to it. I actually look forward to the Brandon Linder, Corey Legit matchup.
You look forward to that. I'm looking forward to the Bortles.
Well, I mean, that's the obvious. I mean, everyone who's listening to us and everyone who's going to be watching the game and listening to us on the radio is going to be can't wait to see.
All
what
eyes
Bortles
will
does.
Be on number what five.
Five, but I'll be watching. I'm looking forward to see how the rookie does against one of the better defensive tackles in the AFC.
Let's go to the phone lines before we head to break. John in Fleming Island wants to talk about game prep. John, you've been holding. What's up?
Hey, guys. How are y'all doing?
Great.
Can you just take a moment for the casual or the, you know, the average casual fan, kind of give us an idea on a West Coast game? What is some of the preparation? For example, is a West Coast game planned any differently than, say, a game that's played here on the East Coast or a Kansas City, Dallas, that where you're not going all the way out to the West Coast? Is there any other game preparation that goes on with a game that's played out on the West Coast? And I'll take your answer off the air.
I appreciate the call.
It's a great question. You know, when you go to
the Jags have not been historically good on the West Coast.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, part of the reason is that the Jaguars have not been a very good football team lately.
Okay.
You know, I mean, and they're working towards that. Okay. I mean, that's a big reason why. I mean, look at the Seattle Seahawks, who probably travel more miles than anybody in the National Football League.
They're pretty good.
And they're pretty good. They travel well. So, but I mean, there are certain things that you try to be able to handle when you travel to the West Coast, because you're stuck on a plane. When you travel to the West, it's a longer flight.
You got to be hydrated.
You don't have the tailwind, so you always try to get up on the airplane and stretch, and they encourage guys to do that. Get up, move around, stretch, and then drink lots of fluids, because supposedly elevation can dehydrate you. The other thing is that once you get there –
Well, it's like, not really supposedly. It's actually science.
I guess it is.
I mean, it's not like it's like a wives.
Well, and like when, for example, the Jaguars are going out on Friday, and I know, like with Tom Coughlin, we'd go on a Friday, and
we only went on Friday once.
One time.
And then the rest
we didn't
time,
win, so we went, on Saturday.
And we won.
But so a lot of times here, what you try to do is when you get there is to have some type of exercise more so on a Saturday than you typically would.
Yeah, get the blood moving.
Just to be able to get some blood moving and get some flexibility back and work the kinks out from being cooped up on an airplane for such a long trip.
I got to be honest with you, though. And we didn't do it. For whatever reason, we didn't have very many West Coast games when we were here. We were just a handful. I mean, less than a handful. I felt no different whether we went out Friday or – I mean –
The biggest thing is to try to keep.
Did you feel, I mean,
no,
yeah.
The biggest thing is to try to keep the schedule
That's
normal.
It. That's right.
So in other words, don't adjust to the West Coast time in a short period of time.
Just,
when you go out there, okay, and it's 7 a.m. and your body's accustomed to waking up at 7 a.m. on the East Coast, and it's 4 o'clock on the West Coast. Get up, and keep your routine exactly the same. That's what I did. Not that that was the great answer, but
I honestly really do think, if you allow it to become an issue, it'll be an issue.
Usually better teams travel better.
Yeah, it's amazing. The good teams have no problem with it. I mean, San Diego had no problem going to Buffalo. I think they did just fine.
That's very true.
It was, 10 a.m. when they kicked off?
Yep.
They were awake.
They showed up and they played the game for sure. Go along the fuel-efficient Ford Fusion. See your Southern Ford dealer today. Proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ford, go further. When we come back, we'll preview Thursday night. A couple of games around the league this weekend, too. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio. Republic Services is the undisputed leader in recycling in Northeast Florida, the official waste provider of the Jags, proudly serving the residents and businesses of Northeast Florida for over 30 years. Call Republic Services for all of your waste and recycling solutions, and they will take it from here. Follow up on our last conversation, Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Buscelli. The Jaguars are 2-9 all time on the West Coast, at Oakland, at Seattle, at San Diego, and at San Francisco, and have dropped 6 straight.
Yeah, let me see that for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, because when I'm looking at this, you know, the quality teams, 96, we weren't a good football team yet.
That was early.
97.
It was a close game. It was like 10-3 we lost. You guys played well. We were awful.
Yeah, 3-17 we lost.
Oh, three, but it was 10-7 in the fourth quarter. Yep. We choked it away.
Yeah, it was the – we did a pick six. It was 10-3 and then a pick six.
We were driving. Yeah, we were awful.
97, awful. Go to Oakland again and win.
Yep.
Better team in 97, yep. Right?
Sure.
And then, you know, the heyday years, you know, 97, 98, 99, not a West Coast trip in 98 or 99.
2001, we were beat up, and we actually, it was against Seattle, we were driving, I think, to take the lead, and who was the back? Stacey Mack dropped it on the carpet inside the red zone, and that was all she
wanted. And then you look at most of the trips.
I remember. I mean,
you're still a little bitter about that.
I remember. He's wide open run. I mean, he might walk into the end zone, and somehow he just dropped the ball.
The rest of the trips are basically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 trips from 09 to 13 when this team is, you know, still trying to find its way.
Yep.
But
Jeff said it best. You know, good teams don't have trouble traveling.
Yeah, play the schedule that's in front of you, right? Well, the schedule in front of the Jaguars is a practice tomorrow here outside of Everbank Field, and then a flight tomorrow. They'll fly cross country. You guys will jump on the plane. You'll jump on the plane.
Yeah, I'm staying. We got a high school football game Friday night, so I'm going to fly myself out Saturday morning.
So flying out Friday, they'll have a walkthrough at San Diego State on Saturday, and then play ball on Sunday. And so you're in favor of the going out a day early?
No, not really. I mean, I'd assume just go on a Saturday and keep it as normal as you would any other game. But, I mean, there are ways to look at it. I remember the first West Coast trip that we ever took here in Jaguars history. You know, we flew out on Friday and then had a pretty significant walkthrough practice on Saturday, which, you know, usually you don't even break a sweat. And we did.
Which I didn't like.
You know, and
I mean, I liked when we didn't break a sweat. I didn't like when we had to.
No, but it's just different. I mean, there's no secret to it. You know, good teams can leave on Wednesday. Good teams can go to London and play a team that, you know, is from Germany and only has to have a short trip and do well. It doesn't matter. You know, it's all about how good your team is to how good it travels.
And I guess the theory going early, you get acclimated a little bit more. But, I mean, I travel a lot in off season and do different things. And now I'm not playing a football game, but I guess I think it's a mindset more than anything.
Yeah,
I really do.
Yep.
And so I'm indifferent when they go. But
the New York Giants had to make the long trek to Washington, D.C. for tonight's game at FedEx Field. Giants, Redskins, who you got tonight?
That's an interesting one. I mean, the Giants got a win last week, but you know, they haven't shown enough before that proved to me that they're consistent. Whereas the Redskins played very well against the Jaguars with Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins played well last week.
Offensively, they played very well last week.
I mean, just what happened to that defense? Did they think that they were great just because they played well against the Jaguars? You know, I mean, it's, you know, the Redskins, I picked them.
D'Angelo Hall's out.
Tore his Achilles.
Probably done. Might be his career for that position, his age. Listen, the Giants have not been very good. And they beat a Houston team who I don't think is all that good. And so, you know, it all depends. New offense, they're trying to figure themselves out. They ran the ball better for the first time against Houston last week. And so,
but what's wrong with Eli Manning?
Yeah, is he an elite guy still?
No, never was,
never
in my
was,
book.
Really.
No.
I never thought he was an elite guy.
I thought he was good, very good, but not elite. He
got a great last name.
Won two Super
Bowls. Two Super Bowl rings.
Great,
no,
great
I know.
You want to know when he was great?
Yeah.
In two playoff runs. He was great.
He was fantastic in playoffs.
In two playoff runs. Well, I want – you know, listen, I want the Giants to win because I think a lot of us root for Tom here, but I just think I think the Redskins are a better team.
Yep.
And so I got the Redskins.
Quickly, a couple other games this weekend. Packers-Bears, who you got?
Well, the Packers are struggling mightily. I mean, offensively, they can't do anything. Detroit completely shut them down. Aaron Rodgers is not playing very well. They can't run the ball, meaning their offensive line is as average as the day is long. But the Bears can't stop anyone in the run. So, is it in Chicago?
It's in Chicago.
I'm going to go with the home team. I'll go Chicago.
Jeffrey?
I think the Packers get back on the plus side of things. You know, when you have a quarterback –
Two weeks ago, I'd have picked – Packers
all day long.
All day long, but they have not looked good.
I just can't imagine Aaron Rodgers, you know, starting out a season like that record-wise.
Well, think about this. They lost to Seattle bad. They were down 21-3 to the Jets. And the Jets aren't very good.
No,
and then they got hammered. Now, the score wasn't a hammer, but they got physically hammered against the Detroit Lions. I mean, if you took – Aaron Rodgers' name off the back of the jersey and just judge for what they are this year, they're not a very good football team.
Yeah, but I said this about the Detroit Lions back in the preseason. They will be the most improved football team in the National Football League this year because they finally got a stable, calming presence at head coach, and they've got weapons.
You mean
on
Jim
offense.
Schwartz wasn't calming and stable?
Oh, my God.
I don't know why you'd say that,
yeah,
Jeff.
I know.
Jeff Lagerman, Tony Buscelli, well done.
Thanks.
Enjoy San Diego. For everyone involved, for Joe Fortunato, this is JP Shadrick. That's it for Jaguars Thursday, a 4:05 kick Sunday at Qualcomm Stadium. Jaguars Chargers coming up.